Hello, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, February 10th, 2014, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. The delightful literary artist Stella Harris is back with us again today for part two of her turn on this, The Erotic Mind Show. Besides the great conversation we had last week, Stella read from her work, and she, like, totally steamed up the joint, don't you know? With a little luck, I think I'll be able to prevail upon her to cast another smutty spell today. So stick around. It's going to be quite a ride. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our chat, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my podcasts in the podcast archive on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the search function in the header, type in podcast number 405, and presto! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. And be sure to visit Stella on her beautiful site, stellaharris.net. She's on Facebook and Twitter, too, and you can look for all of these links in today's podcast posting. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab in the header. The Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. And remember, a portion of the money you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. So knock yourself out. Okay, on with the show. Stella Harris, thanks for coming back to drdicksexadvice.com for part two of your go-around here on the Erotic Mind Show. It's good to have you back. Did you have a nice week?
I had a fantastic week, and it's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So before we get to discussing erotic art in general and your work in particular, let's talk about you. Is Stella Harris your real name or a nom de plume? And if it is, why and how did you choose that name?
Well, you used the term once, nom de perversion.
Ah, I know. It's like my favorite.
Stella Harris isn't my given name, though I'm working on making it a business name. I struggled with the decision for a while. I even published a true account of my first same-sex encounter on Nerve.com under my full legal name. Mm-hmm. I was eventually convinced by a smut-writing friend that I could be limiting my future employment options, so I did choose a new name. I actually go by Stella in my day-to-day life now.
Oh, is that right?
It offered me a great deal of freedom to reinvent myself, to do the things I might not have thought were in me. I just have to send Stella the sexy, confident extrovert, and everything works out.
How did you come up with Stella Harris? Because I think it's really informative about the names that we give ourselves.
Mm-hmm. It's a character in one of my favorite books.
Oh, is that right? Interesting.
Yeah, An Awfully Big Adventure by Beryl Bainbridge. The protagonist's name is Stella. The last name I was a little bit more random. There's a moment where the character is called Stella Maris, which is sort of a Catholic icon. And so I wasn't ready to go quite that far in that. I already had a lot of Google hits. So I went with something that basically rhymed with the
word
I wanted. Yeah. The character is also called Stella by Starlight, which is a reference to a jazz song. So I have used that as well on some websites when I need an alter ego.
Right. Ave Maris Stella.
There you go.
I was a Catholic priest for 20 years. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Well, now you do.
Do you still have the outfit?
Oh, honey, I got the whole rig, don't you know? Interested?
Maybe.
You are perfect. I like that about you. Okay, so give us a brief bio. Tell us lots of interesting things about yourself, where you were born and raised and schooled. Do you like muscle magazines and gladiator movies? Do you have a husband, a wife, a partner, or a pet? That kind of stuff.
Oh, boy. Well, I was actually born in Hollywood, California.
Get out!
Not all as glamorous as it sounds, but I was raised in Los Angeles, and I lived there until I moved away to Santa Cruz for college. An interesting place to grow up, to be sure, but L.A. never really felt like the best fit for me. I've lived in Portland, Oregon now for nearly 12 years, and this feels like home.
Oh, great.
I was married for 9 years, but I'm divorced now. Still on good terms with my ex. I live in a small house with 3 dogs and 4 chickens. So I've become a little bit of a Portland cliche.
So true. I love it.
And I have a kind of an out of control yard that occasionally produces a decent vegetable crop. I'm hoping this will be a good year for me.
Good, good, good. We've had a very nice winter. Dry, sadly, but mild.
Yeah, so far so good. I'm going to probably have at least the first few seeds in the grounds in a couple of weeks. We'll see.
Very cool.
Things that I like, I don't know. I enjoy things that a lot of people find creepy, morbid, or bizarre. A couple recent gifts from my boyfriend illustrate my taste pretty well. For my birthday, he got me a necklace made from a cast of a taxidermied owl foot.
Wow.
And for Christmas, he got me earrings made from snake bones. I also have a rubber model of a severed human foot in my bookcase in the living room, which is from one of my favorite local authors, Chelsea Kane.
Wow.
So, definitely a fan of spooky, creepy things.
Have you been writing all of your life? And when did the erotic stuff begin to appear?
I've been writing in one form or another for basically as long as I can remember. There have been dirty bits here and there. When I was in a long-distance relationship, writing dirty letters back and forth was, I think, good practice for me, putting my fantasies in writing, although I think my style has changed quite a bit over the years.
Well, one would expect, would you not? I mean, if you were still writing as like a teenager or something like that, wouldn't that be disturbing?
Yeah, I think so.
I love it. So the erotic stuff, as it began to appear in your work, wasn't particularly surprising, I'm guessing.
Not really. I've always been very sex positive and involved in communities where sex is talked about, so it hasn't really been a taboo for me.
Right. Was your family like sex positive too? Were you like a wild child kind of thing?
Yes and no. Uh-huh. I don't think there's any podcast length answers to that question. My parents sort of treated me like a tiny adult, so I think I saw a lot of movies and this and that with them that were probably not age-appropriate, and my mom was always very open about sex. I remember my first, sex talk with her and later talking about, her first experiences, but my mom actually passed away when I was 12.
Oh, wow.
So while I did have very good early experiences, I then went to live with my grandparents, which was not so much an open environment.
Right.
So I already had the background of not being ashamed of sex, but then was dropped into a space where I didn't talk about it as much. But at that point, I was savvy enough to seek out good information on my own.
So you also say about yourself, when she's not reading or writing smut, she loves to travel, bake, garden, and talk to strangers on the internet. You can often find her making trouble at the local dungeon or haunting bookstores and coffee shops dressed impractically in high heels. So strangers on the internet, you don't say.
I have had a great interest in online communities since my days of dial-up in AOL chat
room. Wow.
Yes, back in the day when I first got my hands on a computer. Yeah. I immediately loved the ability to role-play any character I could imagine. I had so many different screen names. More recently, I've met people online through volunteer work I've done. I have left the country to meet people across the world after
wow.
only knowing them online. I regularly share hotel rooms at conferences with people I've met online. And, of course, some of my online activities are a little naughtier. I even have a story coming out soon that delves into that side of things.
Right. You know, there must be something in the water because the last person from Portland who was on my show was Tanya Joan Miller.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Isn't she outstanding? She's such a joy and so nutty. I love it. It's just absolutely so it's got to be something in that Portland water, don't you know?
Well, it's dark and wet. We're all home huddling around our computers.
I talked about your high heel thing last week, and again this week. Is that a fetish for you?
Well, I think the term fetish gets thrown around a lot.
I don't
think I have any true fetishes, you know, by definition, that I would require them to be present to
okay.
get off. But I would say that high heels are a turn-on, mm-hmm. and I definitely have plenty of turn-ons.
Very cool. And local dungeons. Do tell.
Well, back to the whole, you know, Portland being dark and wet thing, I think we find ways to have fun indoors. So Portland has a pretty vibrant kink scene. There are a lot of venues and dungeons locally, and I often host parties. I frequently work as a dungeon monitor. I also give tastings at events and teach classes.
Oh, wow. Right. You mentioned that last week. Yes. Good.
Yeah. And I'm also known for my laugh, and I get kind of loud when I play. So people tell me they know right away if I'm already in the room.
Outstanding. So before any more time goes by, I'm going to prevail upon you to read again for us because I think it's the best way to understand somebody's erotic mind.
All right. Let's see what book is next in the pile here. Well, last week you read a review for The Jeffrey Factor.
Right, yes, good.
Big Book of Orgasms. That one is edited by Rachel Kramer Bussell, who is an amazing force in the erotica world.
Right. Like
this particular book is all of stories that are under 1,200 words, so they're just tasty little erotic snippets.
Oh, cool.
So I will dive in and read that story for you. You're such a slut for this. Shane heard Jeff's dark chuckle, knew he was leaning close. The side of Shane's face tingled, waiting for the brush of Jeff's beard that never came. Jeff said he loved how responsive Shane was, how easy it was to tease and torment him because his reactions were so immediate and obvious. Shane's body couldn't keep its secrets. Shane's attention had achieved that laser focus that resulted from hours of teasing. There was only one thought he could hold in his mind, and that was how desperately he wanted, no needed, release. A cold intrusion brought Shane's mind back to the here and now. The chilled, sleek metal of Jeff's favorite new toy sliding into his ass, its curved shape and knobbed head perfectly designed to drive him mad. Shane writhed on the bed and felt a puff of air against his thigh and sensed Jeff's silent chuckle as he enjoyed Shane's discomfort. Jeff let him adjust to the sensation for a moment, sliding the vibrator in and out slowly, twisting and rubbing it against his inside walls, but only teasing the spot where he really wanted it. The vibrator switched on and Shane moaned around the gag in his mouth. Even on the lowest setting, the sensations lit up his nerves. His nipples peaked and tightened, and he thrust his hips upward, hoping against hope for friction he didn't find. Jeff laughed again. He claimed not to have a sadistic side, but he didn't enjoy dishing out pain, but Shane considered this cruelty all the same. Shane knew Jeff would reward him for it later. He would be held and gentled, stroked and comforted as his body shook and he recovered from the adrenaline pulsing through his veins. But the safety of that relief was a long way off yet. Jeffrey was just hitting his stride, and this night was far from over. Jeff angled the vibrator so it pressed against Shane's prostate, and Shane wailed, the sound muffled by the gag. So pretty like this, Jeff said, the fingers of his free hand ghosting along the length of Shane's engorged cock. Shane whimpered at the not enough touch, his hips stuttering forward seeking more contact, but this only encouraged Jeff. His fingers trailed up and down, tracing the raised veins, the ridge of his head, the sensitive glands. Shane felt everything so acutely he thought he could even feel Jeff's individual fingerprints, and the occasional scrape of a callus made him flinch. Jeff's grip tightened, and without being told, Shane knew it was too good to be true. Jeff counted. 10 strokes, and then his hand would disappear. Shane's hips thrust upward repeatedly, making his cock bob in the air untouched. Then Jeffrey's hand returned, his low, gravelly voice counting out the strokes once more, the sound of his voice as much a torment as his touch. This teasing would be bad enough on its own, but this particular torment had started days ago when Jeffrey had asked just how far he'd be willing to go. Shane had been so eager to please that he had readily agreed to all that was asked of him, without really thinking it through. But then Jeffrey had expected him to pay up, to go through with everything he'd agreed to, and that had brought Shane here, tied securely to his bed, enduring hours of torment, all after going a week without coming. Shane choked back the sounds of fighting to escape from his throat. He wanted to beg, but the gag would allow no words, and he knew from experience that begging only incited Jeff to further cruelty. Shane could tap out, give the nonverbal safe word they'd agreed on, but Shane wanted to prove that he could do this, that he could be everything Jeff wanted him to be. "So good for me," Jeff said, once more seeming to read Shane's mind. It was unnerving, the way Jeff knew him so well, knew what he was thinking, what he was feeling, how to push his buttons. Jeff's fingers trailed lower, his fingernails gently scratching against the taut skin of Shane's balls. "You're so full," Jeff said, wrapping his fingers around the base of Shane's sack and squeezing ever so gently. The muscles of Shane's abdomen clenched and he moaned, long and deep. Jeff's torments were getting playful, and when his mood turned like this, Shane never knew what to expect. Jeff gripped the vibrator and angled it, and Shane arched his back in response, not sure if he was trying to get closer or get away. He was so close to coming that it hurt. He tried to remind himself that he wanted this, that it would all be worth it in the end. When he was first asked to go a week without jacking off, it hadn't sounded like such a big deal. It wasn't as if he was a chronic masturbator. He regularly went days without. What he hadn't counted on was the Jeffrey factor. Just because Shane wasn't allowed to come didn't mean Jeff planned to refrain from sexual activity. Every day of Shane's abstinence held a different trial. Jeff's favorite was to order Shane to go down on him, to use Shane's mouth roughly and then not return the favor, not even let Shane hurriedly finish himself off while still kneeling at Jeffrey's feet. Jeff knew how hot it got Shane to have his face fucked, to be used for Jeff's pleasure, how it made him ache within the confines of his pants, how his hand actually twitched with the urge to grip himself and blow his load. With a quick tug, the blindfold was ripped from Shane's eyes. Even the dim light of the room was blinding for an instant. As his vision came into focus, the sight that greeted him was Jeff kneeling between his legs, gripping his own cock and stroking it the way Shane wanted to be stroked. His own cock ached in sympathy. He could almost feel the sensations he knew Jeff was experiencing, and he thrashed in his bindings, no longer able to help himself. "Look so fucking hot like that, so fucking desperate," Jeff said, barely coherent as his hand moved faster. Shane knew what it felt like to have that hand working him. He wanted to be touched like that now. Jeff let out a long, strangled groan, his hand, so recently a blur of motion, stilled. His spend splashed onto Shane's aching cock, and Shane sobbed, tears of frustration slipping from his eyes and dampening his cheeks. "Don't make me give you something to cry about," Jeff's voice was dark, used but far from worn out. Jeff had had his release, but Shane knew his own would be a long time coming.
That's wonderful. I think you were a homosexual in a your previous life. A big fat gay person.
I will take that as a
compliment. That is. It's a great compliment. Because, you know, I've read a fair amount of gay erotica that I couldn't really tell one way or another if, you know, who wrote it, what gender wrote it. But there have been times where, you know, I'm like right into a story and I'm really deep into it. And then the author uses a word that no gay man would ever use. And then that ruins the whole thing. So it's an art form, I'm guessing. There you have it. So, as you know, the primary reason for doing this series of interviews is to uncover something of the creative process. Are you living the life of a full-time sexual athlete? And if not, what sparks the images that become your erotica?
Well, for the last couple of years, this has been full-time for me.
Oh, cool.
In some ways, I think it was easier to slip into fantasy when my real life was less exciting, because then I needed the escape. And now so many of my fantasies in real life are fulfilled, I think I need to reach a little further for inspiration.
Wow. Does that make your stuff more edgy then, do you suppose?
Maybe in some cases. I mean, I've never drawn only from real life experiences. I think
I
it
see.
Would be impossible, like in the case just demonstrated. I don't have the equipment.
Sure. Sure, you're trying to sell me on that.
But I definitely find inspiration in other erotic work, especially erotic art. I look at a lot of still images and will just a glimpse of a position in a still image can spark a whole story in my mind.
Wow, very cool. So most of the literary artists I've chatted with for this series have focused on writing traditional erotica. Each of the authors I've chatted with claim that their writing is part of a much bigger genre, which some have identified as sex writing. Do you happen to agree with that? Is your erotica part of a bigger thing, and is that bigger thing sex writing?
I haven't heard it phrased like that before. To me, the term sex writing brings to mind nonfiction.
Right.
I think that the two can cohabitate, and
right.
I think a lot of people like me actually exist in both worlds.
Right.
But yeah, for me, it's different genres.
Right. Okay. How about the differences that you perceive between erotica and romance?
Well, people seem to think that romance is classier than erotica. at least in some circles, romance is okay, but you know, erotica gets—it's
true—pushed
off with porn as if that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
So I definitely think there's a firm line between the two. But I also see calls for erotic romance, so I think that the line is starting to blur with
right.
the genres overlapping a bit.
Right. And it's curious that you said that, you know, that some people say romance is good and erotica not so good, because there's also people out there who say erotica is good and pornography is not good. So, I mean, there's all this, you know, gradation on, you know, the spectrum, and it's just really odd to me. And that's, you know, kind of where the whole sex writing thing came in, as far as I could tell. When we began discussing this, guests before you, it was like, well, what do you call all of this stuff? And that's where the sex writing thing came in. Would you consider your stuff pornographic, or don't you get that far, or is that not an accurate description?
It seems to me that a lot of people like to say that what they're doing is okay, but what those people over there are doing, those are the perverts, that's what's not okay.
Yeah, right.
So I think the romance people maybe point at the erotica people, and then some of the erotica people might point at the porn people, and there's just a lot of pointing fingers, and I think it's really unnecessary.
Right. I do too. Do you consider your work in any way, shape, or form pornographic? Being good pornographic or bad pornographic, whatever.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the word porn.
Good. I don't either.
Yeah, and so I do try and use it sometimes. In my head, I think of porn as a more visual medium,
right.
but I don't think that necessarily has to be true.
That's true.
There was a lot of talk when I was down at Catalyst Con last fall about feminist porn and what that means.
That's true.
And I think that erotica can help to fill that space. So I don't think it's a bad thing, and I would be happy to have my work called porn, although I think because at this point, only people who are already pro-erotica are reading my work, there hasn't been a lot of pointing of fingers. I guess I haven't upset the right or wrong people for that thing. But there's
still time.
I look forward to upset many more people in the future.
Good for you. Are there topics that you gravitate toward and topics that you avoid?
Well, I think I tend to gravitate toward things that interest me.
Uh-huh.
It depends on the piece in a lot of instances. When I see one of my favorite editors, you know, has a new call out for stories, I will generally try and write for them. So sometimes it's an easy fit, like if the theme of the collection is bondage or kink or something like that, or if it's not too far a stretch. So I definitely have to be something I feel strongly enough about that I can say something on it.
Right.
There isn't a whole lot that I avoid on principle, but there are sometimes things that I think are just not the best fit for me. I've seen calls for things that are, say, sports related or something like that, and I just know that I can't do them justice.
Right.
Although I've incorporated locker rooms in a few instances.
And we already know why that is, huh?
Being played. So.
Your former life,
yeah.
Don't you know? So you're giving yourself away, and I didn't really mean that to happen in this interview, but there you have it. So what do you look for in the erotic art or written erotica of others?
You know, it's tricky. I don't think that there is any one thing. I've started to find there are certain authors whose work I know I will like, and I think it has to do with a particular voice, a particular tone. Mm-hmm. I think in erotica, especially, as you mentioned earlier, word choice is very important. And there are certain, especially what words you use to describe body parts,
right.
That can be deal breakers or turnoffs for people.
Right.
If people use very flowery language, that is a guaranteed way to lose me. I don't like a lot of metaphors about blooming and flowering. And,
or deflowering, for that matter.
No. and I think getting too clinical can be a problem as well.
Right.
And again, I'm not saying there isn't an audience.
Right,
for that,
it's true.
But I get too hung up on the word choice to get turned on at that point.
Right. Who are your inspirations and who are your sexual heroes, if you have any?
Shauna Germain is one of...
Yes.
My inspirations. She is in part to blame for my current career as an erotica author.
She's led many a people astray, that woman.
Yes. I took a class with her a while ago, and it was some of her advice about how to get published was what gave me the confidence to actually send some of my stuff off.
Right.
And the first time I was actually published in a book alongside her, I may have squealed a bit when I saw both of our names on the table of contents. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
She's and
been
then,
on this show twice. One on one interview and one interview where she and KJB talk about the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon.
Ah, yes.
So
I'll have to
keep
searching through your archives.
Right.
And other editors that I've worked with, Allison Tyler and Rachel Kramer-Bussell, I adore both of them and their work. In the bigger kink world, Tristan Taramino is amazing.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I've gotten to speak with her and do classes with her, and I have a very brief appearance on one of her podcasts.
Oh, how cool.
and so, yeah, I love that she has sort of put together all of the pieces the way I'm hoping to. So she's a role model in that way with the writing and the teaching and just all the pieces together.
Right. And the movie making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if that's my forte, but I'm so glad that she's out there doing it and putting hot educational material out there. So that's amazing.
One last question. That's the only thing we have left time-wise. Any advice for the novice writer of erotica?
Well, I think the first thing is that you need to write what you find hot, because if you're not into it, that's definitely going to come across.
Right.
So write what you love first, and then if you like it, especially now that we have the internet to reach people, someone else is going to like it too.
Very cool.
So I would say just put it out there and find your audience.
Very cool. And then give us your website address again. Walk us around a bit. Tell us where we can find your work and buy it, mind you.
Certainly. Well, you can find me on my website, www.stellaharris.net. It's STLLAHARRIS.net. And from there, you'll find links to my Facebook and my Twitter. Twitter is @StellaErotica. And I have a whole page of my published works with links to where you can buy. It's all available on Amazon. Some of it will be available at your local brick-and-mortar store as well. And I always advocate looking for local independent bookstores first, if you can.
Good for you. Very cool. I want to thank you for taking so much of your precious time and offering it to us, opening your erotic mind, which is amazing and broad and vast and kinky and wonderful. We wish you all the very best in this new year, and we are going to be looking for really marvelous stuff from you in the coming months.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Good, good, good. So until we speak again, which I hope will be soon, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
Fantastic.
Take care, darling. Be well.
You too.
Bye. What an outstanding show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this same time for another edition of the Erotic Mind Show, which will feature a conversation with a brilliant young visual artist and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. So your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh? And remember, a portion of the money that you spend at Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library, educating, enriching, and entertaining yourself, comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. So knock yourself out. Until next time, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.